You're listening to the Teach Better Talk podcast, featuring expert educators eager to share progressive tactics to reach more students. Teach Better Talk is created by teachers and fueled by passion. Let's get started.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 88 of Teach Better Talk. I'm Ray Hewart, and as always, I'm with my mastery-loving Jeff Gargas. How are you, Jeff?
I'm good. I'm just loving mastery over here.
This entire episode is like jam-packed with mastery learning. If you don't know what that is, this is going to be the most educational podcast you and I have ever recorded.
So let's start it off the right way, then. We're going to dive right into this, Ray. Because we do talk a lot about mastery learning, because Lori is, she's a huge advocate of it, and she does an amazing job with it in her schools. You know, we talk a lot about it and the different benefits of it and why it should be used, things like that in the episode, but we really don't like cover the actual like sort of definition of. And, you know, a lot, it's a term that gets thrown around and sometimes gets connected to certain other things like personalized learning and student-centered learning and things of that nature. But so I was wondering if you could just sort of, for anyone who's listening, maybe who's heard of mastery learning, maybe they haven't even heard of it, but if they've heard the term, but maybe they haven't dug into it and maybe not really familiar with it, can you give us sort of like the 1,000-foot view of what is mastery learning? And then also, I know, because I always enjoy your story about why you, like how you started implementing mastery in your classroom. So can you kind of give us the, hey, this is what mastery learning is, and this is why I eventually made it work in my classroom. Do you mind?
Gosh, don't let me ramble, Jeff. This is like, I could talk about this for hours.
And go.
Okay. Well, first off, gosh, the work we do with mastery learning is like nonstop. So I just led a Twitter chat on Saturday morning for hashtag lead up chat, and we talked all about this. And the focus was the comparison between personalized learning, which is a really hot topic right now, and mastery learning, and how they're different but should be used together. So, real quick. Personalized learning, which I'm sure a lot of you have heard about, is this opportunity that teachers now have to personalize a student's approach towards understanding something. So it really has this idea like student voice and student choice and how they're communicating they understand something. But the flip side is you have educators that are doing that without mastery, and mastery has to be a part of that. I wholeheartedly believe it. This concept of mastery learning is allowing students to ensure they understand something before they move on to something else, something more challenging, that next layer of depth of knowledge. So yes, you have to take these pieces and kind of shove them together. And that's where we get this mastery learning approach of to allow students to ensure they've mastered something, give them voice, give them choice. And then as they are proving mastery to you, let's confirm they fully understand it before moving forward, because that's really how we build that concrete base that everything from there forward will be built upon. So that's, I guess, closer to my definition or comparison of these really popular hot topics. As far as my story, Jeff, you want to hear my story?
Yeah,
about
so like,
learning?
Because I know that you, I think you like the general concept and theory of mastery learning, but you're like, that's just, it doesn't work. It doesn't work in a classroom until, you know, I changed your life.
Well, okay, let's be dramatic here. No, for real though, I mean, I was sitting on a Skype call, I think it was a Google Hangout, with you and Chad talking about mastery learning, this mastery framework, blah, blah, blah. And I remember sitting there smiling on camera, internally rolling my eyes, because I really believed to my core that this idea was fabulous, but it wasn't possible in the classroom I had. Like, I really believed that if you worked in the right school that had the right funding with the right supportive parents and the right collaborative colleagues, then sure, this idea was wonderful. But I was never planning on working in those schools. I wasn't for sure in that school then at that point in time. And so I was kind of thinking of this idea like, yeah, but how do you make it manageable? I had tried flipped classroom. I had done kind of the little pieces. And yes, I liked them. I'm not complaining. But there were so many gaps and like hurdles that I was constantly feeling like I'd get one step forward and two steps back. I felt like I was like picking, you know, have you ever seen that meme with little kids holding like all the tennis balls, and every time he leans down to pick one up, two more fall out, and then he puts them back. Do you know what I'm talking about? That's how I was feeling with Mastery Learning. And so when you and Chad were on the video, they're like, Ray, just try it. I'm like, oi, oi, oi. And I really believe that you saved my career. And I do not get all blushy over there or let this go to your head, Jeff Gargis. But I was so desperate as an educator to find a way to build rigorous curriculum while keeping that mastery focus and wanting to have time to build relationships with students. And I swear, that was what I needed, this mastery framework. And so it's funny talking about mastery now because, gosh, I can never go back. And it's not that I don't want to go back. I really do reflect on that quite frequently during the hard days. You know, I'm like, oh, this would be so much easier for me if I changed. But my students love it. And that is, I think that's data right there. When students don't let you go back to the old way because they love this ownership over their learning and they're learning more than they ever have before, you know you're doing something right.
And that's one of the most common things, that we talk about, because that's how all of this got started. The whole Teach Better team got started is via the grid method and students literally telling their teachers, you're not teaching right anymore. Why do we not have that ownership again? What is going on? Why are you doing it this way? And that's kind of how it spread. You mentioned data. I want to share data here that I think you're going to love, Ray, from one of our schools that we work with in Cleveland, Ohio, inner city school that started working with us with the grid method, the mastery learning, through the grid method. They've given us, we've been with them for the last 2 years. We're working with this, the third year now working with them, but we were looking at data over the last couple of years. So their state testing in algebra state test prior to implementing mastery learning, they had a 7.3% pass rate.
Wow.
After year one, that jumped to 38%.
Wait, 7.3 to 38?
Yes.
Wow.
After last year, now into year two, jumped up to 43.
Wow.
So, like, that's just, if anybody's listening, you needed data, there's a little piece of data for you. And all the other scores did the same thing. That was the most dramatic. Well, American history has jumped from prior to the Mastery Learning, they are 40% up to this past year, 74%. I mean, the growth is unbelievable. And the crazy thing is we see this everywhere that we work with. Sometimes not quite as big of a shift, but big jumps. That school's taken their state report card from an F to a C. So that's just the power of mastery learning. I love to tell you that we're amazing and it's all us and stuff, but it's the power of mastery learning and putting these frameworks in place that allows you to go it. And you're seeing it, right? We're seeing it all over the country. It's just really, really cool. So
but you're right. You said something spot on. It's about a framework. It's really about, like, as a teacher speaking to other teachers, it's about making it manageable. How do I do this every day and not just on a great Friday or an awesome Tuesday, right? So how do I go in every single day with this high standard? And I just think that's a huge part of education that teachers are constantly trying to find, is that scalability. How do I do this constantly? And that's a huge element of finding that success for students.
And I've always loved that, but you've always preached that very hard. And I love that it's you can't just do an awesome Tuesday or an awesome every third Friday. It's got to be every single day. And why isn't it? And I love that. So I was really happy when Lori came on, because I knew she was an advocate for mastery learning, but then she really brought a lot of it to this episode, which was just great.
Lori is amazing. I wasn't kidding. I said at the end of the podcast recording, but she's going to hear from me a lot. She's going to be annoyed. Like, Ray, stop calling me. I love this episode. She's amazing.
Yeah. So real quick on Lori. So Laura McEwen is She's an assistant superintendent. She's been in education for almost 30 years. She's obviously been an assistant superintendent. She's been a chief of instruction, leadership and equity. She's done strategic directions and curriculum plans for all sorts of grade levels and across districts. She's been the director of academics. Oh, what else has she been on? She's worked in both public and in charter school realms. So she's got a wide range. She does a lot of consulting. Large scale, evaluations and research. I mean, just the list goes on and on. It's crazy. She's actually a distinguished fellow with the students at the center. The Center Research Hub. So really, really cool background, wide range of background, and you hear it in her passion for what she does and her thoughts and the value that she brings in this episode, I think is top notch. And super excited for everyone to listen. Anything in particular other than all the stuff that I just like rambled on about, that you want people to take away from this episode?
You know, I think we're talking about a challenging topic. Mastery learning is not easy. It's a shift in education, which I want to acknowledge, but she presents this in such a wonderful way. She has so many great stories she shares, and she truly does have a very well-rounded idea of where she wants us to go and how to help people get there. And it was wonderful to hear that from a superintendent, you know, hearing that strong leadership background that she's able to have with the positions she's had. So as you listen to this episode, just really take it all in. There's so many little tidbits for you to take away and start thinking about for your own classroom tomorrow.
All right. And with that, let's get into episode number 88 with Lori McEwen.
Hey everyone, while we take this quick break, I want to encourage you to log into Facebook and go join our private Teach Better Team group. It is full of 1,000 educators who are sharing ideas from the classroom, but really also brainstorming ways to start implementing these new initiatives that we're all working on. So go head over to Facebook and make sure you're a part of this incredible team.
All right, we are here and we're talking with Lori McEwen. And Lori, it is super awesome to have you on the podcast today. Really excited to have you on. Appreciate you taking some time out of your day, out of your summer break to hang out with us and have some fun and chat a little bit. So first, before we get going here, how are you feeling right now?
I'm feeling great right now. It's a beautiful day here in Rhode Island, so you can't beat that. We finally have sun more than rain, so all is good. Summer is a good time.
Lori, I love Rhode Island. I cannot wait to hear more about where you live. It was so fun to visit there a few months ago. It's just one of my favorite states.
Yeah, it's fantastic, and I'm fortunate to live down middle of the state, so I'm near the water. I can go running, be at the water, and in 20, 25 minutes, I'm at one of our most gorgeous beaches. So,
well, that's good. Then after our podcast recording, I'm going to hop on a flight. I'm going to come hang out with you for a few weeks. Hope you don't mind.
No, that sounds great.
Well, Lori, I want to make sure that our listeners kind of learn all about you. We're going to dive deep into some great questions today. But would you mind first kind of sharing how you answer the very simple question of what you do?
Sure. So I think what I like to say about what I do is that I'm a change agent. I think that's sort of the most important thing for me. I've been in education for a long time. I just had a milestone birthday. So I've been in education for almost 30 years. And at every turn, what I've tried to do is focus on change, primarily for social justice, but really over the past several years of my career, or past couple of decades, really, it's morphed into best practices in teaching and learning for all students to make sure that all kids are learning deeply and joyfully every single day. So that's what I'm passionate about, and that's what I try to impact change about. I'm currently an assistant superintendent of a school district. I've been a chief academic officer in a large urban district. I've worked in charter school networks as a director of academics, and I've been a teacher and building leader. So I sort of, and I've been a consultant and a researcher. It's been a long career, and so I've worn a lot of hats, but it all comes back to deep and joyful learning for kids.
I'm loving it. And you just rattled off all the different positions and different places that you've worked in education in almost 30 years. So that I love when we have an educator on that's been going as long as you have. So, because I know there's a lot of stories for my next question. So I want to talk about a time that you've had a failure, a challenge that you've had to overcome. Can you kind of tell us a story? Take us there with you. What happened? How did you overcome it? And then what did you learn from that experience?
So what's really funny, Jeff, is as I saw this question from you guys, I really perseverated on it for a while and thought about it. Not because I haven't had failures or mistakes. I've had a ton of them, as you can imagine. But more because, you know, in my work, and I've really been focused on mastery learning, and I've been able to build up or had a hand in building up three small mastery-based high schools in my career. And which is one of the things that attracted me so much to the GRID method and how I came in contact with Chad. this notion of failure, it always seems so absolute, and it feels like, you know, an autopsy rather than a physical. And at this point, at this stage of my life and career, like I said, I've had a milestone birthday. I'm trying to reframe my thinking around failure and trying to think more about what I've learned and how everything has been a learning experience. That said, the times and places where I have made mistakes or not had the intended outcome that I wanted and that I wanted for myself and others were the times when I didn't do two things. I didn't plan well. You know, sort of maybe rushed into something, didn't take all constituents in mind and do that really solid planning with benchmarks along the way so that we could celebrate small wins, and also a failure to communicate. I tend to come at everything from a 30,000 foot view. I'm big picture and, you know, I have vision and passion about where I want to be, and others often share that, but they come at it differently and they need to express their thinking differently and they need to be invited to the conversation differently. And when I forget that and when I forge ahead with my own enthusiasm, sometimes it's catching, but sometimes it's also, it can feel overpowering for folks. And so what I try to do is to think about that and to ask more questions than provide answers. But even at my age, I'm still a work in progress. And so I'm learning from each of those, which is not to say that I don't continue to make the same mistakes.
And we do, right? We continue to make mistakes. We continue to learn. But the important thing is that you have the viewpoint and ability to reflect on that and continuously look for opportunities to learn. And that communication piece is huge when you're trying when you're trying to convey an idea that maybe that you're passionate about. Sometimes it's really hard to slow down and really explain it the right way and communicate it the right way and show the plan you have, because you just get excited, you're just passionate, and you just want to run through the wall and get it done. So I really appreciate that story. That's a good one. So now let's flip it around. Now let's talk about a success you've had. And this can be something big or something small, but take us there with you. What happened? Why was it a success for you? And then what did you take away from that experience?
Yeah. So interestingly, one of my biggest successes, I think, is a place where I did kind of move fast. So as I said earlier, my passion is around mastery learning, around sort of reframing mindsets about what teaching and learning can and should look like, and how it's possible for this not to be a zero-sum game. We don't have to have winners and losers. We can have all kids master core academic content and gain proficiency in specific competencies by trying and retrying, doing retakes and redos, and really thinking about that mastery framework. And so one of my favorite stories about this is I was hired as director of academics for a charter school network, really of the No Excuses charter mold, with a great mission and vision of getting all kids, all of their students prepared for college and career in the world beyond. But there was a lot of traditional aspects of the school, and I was charged in my role as director of academics with planning for the new high school. So we had elementary and we had middle, but we didn't yet have a high school, and that was going to be coming in 2 years from where my story starts. And so I knew that we were going to be a mastery-based high school. It was one of those places where I had the ability to say, this is how it's going to be, and that was the direction that we all move forward in. And as we were creating that, we had students, we call them scholars, who were going to be going into eighth grade, and many of those would go to ninth. And so we needed to, it occurred to me a little bit late in the game, that to get these students ready for high school in a mastery system, we really needed for them to be in eighth grade in a mastery-based system and really go our entire middle school, fifth through eighth, in that system. And so working really fast, being able to iterate, bringing some key players on board, really folks who had a more traditional mindset, but we read the literature about mastery-based learning. We read Guskey and Wormelli and all these others and really thought about what a mastery-based system could look like. I had a great colleague there who headed up math, who was able to come up with a power law averaging system, and so that it was a bit of a compromise, but it got us closer to where we wanted to be. And we just did all of this great work, sort of ripped the Band-Aid off, and went to a mastery system. And a couple of years later, I had, after we'd started the high school in that way, I left and I went to a large urban district. I went to Providence as the chief academic officer. And we had a grant to start up two small mastery-based schools. So I was able to take the school designers for those two schools back to the charter network so they could talk with some students to get their experience in a mastery system. And you may know that kids are reluctant to go into a mastery system. It's new and different for them and can be confusing. Mm-hmm. And you can get pushback there. And these scholars were able to talk about what an impact this system had had on their view of themselves as learners, their understanding of what schools could be. They talked a lot about retakes and redos and this, you know, this sense of perseverance rather than being shut down with a low grade, that they got to try again and get specific feedback and try again. And so the designers for those two new schools were able to take that into their thinking about how they created those schools. So I think those are my greatest successes, building up those schools on a mastery system, getting others to come along the journey with me and persuading them, but persuading them with literature and time and collaboration and compromise. So I think, sorry, that was a really long story, but I feel so excited and passionate about it. So I think that's the biggest success.
Lori, that was an amazing story. I don't think it was too long at all. I was like sitting here at the edge of my seat waiting to hear all the details.
Yeah, it was really great. And the schools continue to flourish. And so I'm really proud of that. And it's really what excites me most in education right now.
Yeah, I have to say there's a few things that I was really passionate about getting into the teaching career. And mastery learning was not one of them. I don't think I really believed in the idea because I hadn't seen it done effectively.
Exactly.
So I thought it was this, you know, like overarching idea that nobody could really implement, and then unless they were in this perfect system with the right students and the right administration and the right funding and all these pieces. And when I started seeing not only the power of it, but how it can absolutely fit into any style of classroom, any style of school building with any style of student, I was shocked. One of my favorite things I've been able to do in my own classroom as a sixth grade teacher is I bring back my students to talk to my new students about what our classroom's like being a mastery focused classroom. And gosh, one of my favorite quotes, Lori, I kid you not, is I had a student come back a few years ago talking to a brand new sixth grader. And I guess she must have been a seventh grader at that point, just a year out. And she was like, "This will be the most challenging and rewarding class you've ever taken." And I was like, "Oh my gosh, how adult." I was just so blown away. They made those connections.
That's awesome. And that's exactly what we want, right? We want, you know, I said this to a group of students once, you know, this should feel like, you know, this true deep learning towards mastery should feel, there should be some moments of pain, but it should feel joyful and exhilarating at the end when it all comes together. It's like, you know, running a race. There's points at which it's painful, points at which maybe you have to slow down, times when you think you need to give up, but you keep going. And at the end, you cross that finish line. And no matter what your time was, no matter what kind of race you ran, you always feel this joy that, you know, you gave it your all, you're sweaty, everything hurts, and your head should feel like that when great learning has taken place. You should feel like you gave it your all, you're so thrilled, and you cross the finish line with pride.
I love that analogy. That is completely true. The shift of a mastery classroom is so challenging. It's hard for the students. It's hard for the stakeholders. It's hard for the teacher. I mean, it's a shift. And it's amazing at the end how much the students can sit back and be like, "Oh my gosh, we did a lot this year. We accomplished a lot this year. We brainstormed a lot this year. We problem solved a lot this year." And we really, you know, I love that analogy of the race. That's wonderful. You know, obviously we share this passion for mastery learning, and you know, it's really keeping us excited about education. I can just tell that we share that passion. On top of what it's exciting you about in terms of how education's moving, is there anything you want to add to that about everything we're doing and how it really fuels your fire?
So, yeah, you know, one of the one of the things I'm really excited about, and of course, this is why I'm so excited, when I met Chad and saw the work that he did and saw how he was able to take this vision, and we talked earlier about communication, it can feel overwhelming. It can feel like a whole new way of doing things. And Chad was able to take the grid method, and it allows people to go in with baby steps. And, you know, I've seen people even in traditional systems that aren't yet moving fully to mastery-based grab hold of it. So I really appreciate that mindset shift. But for me, it's tied into this idea of deeper learning and what it is that we expect, you know, in our profile of a graduate, and how we want students to master core academic content, but also, you know, think critically and solve complex problems and be strong collaborators and develop these academic mindsets. And I see all of this fitting together. And for me, there's an urgency around this because it's exactly what's needed. It was needed yesterday. And we're still moving forward on it. One of the things in our field that I'm really excited about is you may have heard of the Mastery Transcript Consortium. And this is a group of largely private schools, and they've worked with elite universities to say, if we put together a mastery transcript, will you accept it? Now, of course, these are fantastic schools where I think everybody knows these kids are prepared no matter what system they use to, you know, show that preparedness. But it tells us that universities are willing and able to look at different ways of grading students and reporting on their progress and their competency and their mastery. I'm really excited about that. I serve, one of the other hats I didn't mention is I serve on the school committee in the town where I live, and we're doing a lot of talking here about grading and authentic grading and mastery systems and things like the mastery transcript. And that's going to be a huge mind shift for lots of people, parents and community members. We need to really help them to ask questions, invite them to think about it, share literature and thinking, and listen to the concerns that people have. But I'm really so pleased that there's a thing like the Mastery Transcript Consortium out there and the Great Schools Partnership that does work with them, because it's, I think it's the movement we need, because it's going to move us from all levels of society and education.
Absolutely. I'm so thrilled you brought that up. I know it's a little off topic, but this concept of, you know, mastery learning is often linked with the standard-based grading titles, right? And you see these districts say, oh, standard-based grading, that's a new way to better our feedback. Let's focus on the grade book. Let's focus on the report card. Let's focus on the grading scale. And then they get maybe 5 years into their implementation with their teachers, relatively confused on the fact that they are changing their grading scale, but nothing in their classroom has changed. And I love your shift in your story is, no, we want to teach our educators how to be strong educators with a mastery mindset. You know, it's a real shift in how we're giving students back the ownership, and we're teaching to standards, and we're giving them feedback that's personalized so they can meet their success. And then, gosh, the grade book, the transcript, those are the pieces that will naturally come with those. Those are really great, rich discussions to have. So I'm thrilled that you brought that up. Holy cow.
That's a great point. Yeah.
So when you're thinking about these shifts, you're obviously very passionate about mastery learning, and gosh, I cannot wait to continue learning with you as you continue to facilitate these conversations. But what advice do you give teachers, whether it be a new teacher in a teaching district that you're familiar with, or maybe they just started in the classroom, or maybe they just changed schools and they're wanting to continue forward with this progressive mindset of having a student-focused classroom, what feedback do they need? What advice?
So, you know, it was interesting. I thought about this question too. For most teachers, one of my concerns is whether or not in teacher prep we're really approaching student-centered learning the way I think we can and should. I don't know that we're talking about choice and voice in student-centered learning, and we might be talking a bit about standards-based grading, particularly elementary level, but I don't think we're really talking about mastery learning and personalization, and these things go hand in hand. You know, so I think there's a lot that I wouldn't want to put just on new teachers, because these are systemic changes that need to be made. And so when I'm thinking about advice to new teachers and about them honing their craft specifically, one of the things I would say is to ask for feedback, lots of feedback. Even if new teachers have a formal mentor, the more you can invite folks in to say, hey, what do you think of this? And I, you know, with that, there's a caveat, because you want to make sure that if you're thinking about a student-centered approach, you're still asking people to say, this is how I'm driving towards mastery. What are you seeing in my classroom? Who's really cognitively engaged? Who isn't? So you need to be asking people to come in and give feedback about a specific set of questions you have, and then leave it open-ended to what else did you notice that could make my students learn better, and try to focus the questions not just about how you as a teacher are approaching things, but more importantly, tell me about the task that students are engaged in. What did you see? What was the evidence that it was rich and rigorous? And what did you see about the way students were learning, and how can I better facilitate that? So asking questions in that way, I know when I went to through teacher prep, one of my last assignments was to submit a video of me teaching, and literally I didn't need to show the kids. It was me doing, you know, a lesson on Shakespeare, and there was nothing about how the kids were learning. It was all about how I was teaching. So I would say reframe your thinking around how are kids learning? What is it that they're learning? Is it meaningful? And ask people to come in and give feedback, and be prepared to listen to it all. As difficult as it can be, feedback is a gift.
Wow. I love the advice of reframing the way that you think about how students learn, and then asking for feedback. I think that's so crucial. You know, I know, you know, Chad always talks about, like, I mean, he gives so much credit to what he called, you know, teaching in a fishbowl, as he called it when in his early days with the Woodrow Wilson Teaching Fellowship, where he had to be observed constantly.
Right.
So he just got very used to having someone in his classroom, having someone watch him, having someone provide that feedback constantly. And so he's huge on that. So I love when you say that and talk. And that's probably why you and Chad get along so well. So
kindred spirits.
Yeah. So what we're going to do now, we're going to ask Chad to give you some feedback on this next section.
Okay.
So what we're going to do is, for the next six questions, your goal is to answer each one in 15 seconds or less.
All right. Let me
try. You ready to go?
Sure.
All right. Give us one ed tech tool you cannot live without.
Google Docs.
Give us a book you're reading right now.
In Search of Deeper Learning, The Quest to Remake the American High School by Jal Mehta and Sarah Fine.
And who should we follow on Twitter today?
Jen Gonzalez at Cult of Pedagogy, Catlin Tucker at Catlin Tucker, and Thomas Guskey at T. Guskey.
And give us a best YouTube channel or website for educators.
TED Talks, all the way.
Give us a daily, weekly, or monthly routine every teacher should get into.
All right, so daily, breathe, meditate, visualize your day, plan for success. Weekly, do a weekly review and visit another teacher's classroom, at least one. And C, monthly, celebrate wins.
And give us the best piece of advice you've ever received.
I have two. The first is from Stephen Covey: seek first to understand, then to be understood. And the second is from a beloved mentor and principal who reminded me when I was an assistant principal that all parents love their children the best way they know how, and to try to get to yes with them.
Wow. All right. I love the routines you suggested, but I didn't even want to say anything because I wanted to get to the next one because you were flying through these.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to win.
She destroyed the clock, Ray. It was
fantastic. Well, she's going to get the trophy. Let's just
she's
be honest.
She's getting the trophy. Yeah.
She's on the way to you.
Hey, Ray, I think you should deliver it in person.
Yes.
Well, I'm going to go to Rhode Island later today.
That was awesome. I love the advice. I think that's really important, that second piece of remember that all parents love their children the best way they know how, because I think sometimes we can be quick to judge based on how the kids might be getting treated at home, and we don't necessarily know everything else that's going on with that stakeholder there and
Absolutely.
Why they are the way they are and the situation that they're going through. We just see the, you know, a lot of times the negative impact could be having on the students that come into the classroom. And I think understanding that obviously is crucial. We talk about that all the time, understanding what your students are coming from and what they're dealing with at home. But I think going a little bit deeper and figuring out why is that happening there and trying to really understand how it comes together is really crucial. So that's great advice. I love
right.
it.
Well, we serve them, you know, in this profession, we're servants, and we're serving families, we're serving students, and we need to remember that parents are sending us their most precious, the thing or person who's most precious to them in the world every single day. And we owe it to them to try to come to consensus, even in the most difficult times, difficult decisions. We need to remember that they love this person in front of them more than we ever can or will, because they're theirs.
Absolutely. Wow. Lori, it has been such a joy, like, interviewing you. I'm so shocked. There's so many pieces of this podcast that I know I'm going to go back and listen to. And gosh, if you think that this is the last time you're going to hear from me, you are wrong. I cannot wait.
Well, we're going to do the next podcast on the beach, right, Ray? Yeah.
Exactly. We're going to have so much fun when we take our 3-week vacation together.
Can't wait.
But I want to make sure also, I guess, I won't be selfish. I want our listeners to be able to connect with you as well, continue this conversation around mastery and understanding our families and really trying to facilitate these conversations so we can really reach our students more deeply. Would you mind sharing with them how they can connect with you?
No, I think the best way is Twitter. I'm at Lori McEwen, LoriMcEwen. And then I have a website that's laid dormant for a while and I'm resurrecting, and that's LoriMcEwen.com.
Fantastic. I know you can find all the links and resources we've mentioned in this episode over at teachbetter.com, as well as the really important links to connect with Lori and continue the conversation with her. So make sure you head over to the show notes at teachbetter.com for all of that. Be sure to hit subscribe so you don't miss any upcoming episodes. And if you can give us a rating and a review, we'd really appreciate that as well. And let's take it one step further. Think of just three of your colleagues who need to hear these amazing stories and share this podcast with them. Lori, this has been super fun. Really excited having you on. Appreciate you taking the time and sharing your knowledge from your wealth of experience with us and having some fun and getting passionate about mastery learning, which obviously we love. So really looking forward to hearing the podcast from the beach with Ray. All jokes aside, we really appreciate time. Thank you so much.
Jeff and Ray, thank you so much for having me on. Let me know when we can do it again.
All right. Until next time, let's get out there and let's teach better.